And welcome back to this afternoon session on genetics, tolerance to stresses, and evaluation of turf grasses. Next talk, the program, is transpiration response of warm season turf grasses to drying soil. Authors are Sarah Cathy, Jason Cruz, Michael Dukes, and Thomas Sinclair, University of Florida. Presenting Sarah Cathy.
Thanks for coming back after the break. So I'm going to talk about basically applying a technique that's been used with comparing different agronomic species and germplasm to turf grasses, and taking a look at how it worked or didn't work for looking at germplasm differences. So across the country, we're looking at a need for more drought-resistant turf grasses. Due to drought seasons that we've had, like they've been talking about here in Texas, and then also because of limited irrigation water available. And in this case, we're specifically talking about homeowner lawns, so we're looking at more deeply rooted grasses than, say, you might have on a greenhouse on a green. So in order to find genetic differences, we need to have it's good to have a physiologically based test to be able to look comparing across germplasm, and it's nice to have a simple procedure with limited number of variables to be able to pinpoint particular characteristics. And in this case, what we're looking at is what we're going to call a slow wilting characteristic, which means that the plant is slow to close stomata in response to soil water depletion. And by doing this, you're able to maintain longer growth into the season. If the stomata close earlier with higher soil water content, you're able to maintain some of the soil charge in the soil before it gets as low as it might have gotten otherwise. And then we're also looking at potentially limited firing as you go into soil water depletion. So our experimental design is very simple. We have 10 pots each of some common lawn grasses in Florida, Argentine bahia grass, Floritan St. Augustine grass, and Empire zoysia grass, three different types of grasses. We put them in six pots that were drying down, and we had four pots that were maintained at well-watered status. And then we gradually dried these down from a fully saturated state, where they were dripping from the bottom of the pot the evening before we started the experiment, down to 0.1 NTR, which I'm going to define. And I would also state here that we're looking at the same amount of rooting depth in each of these. We made sure that the soil was fully explored in the pots before we started the study. So the normalized transpiration ratio and the fraction of transpirable soil water are the important parameters that we're looking at here. The normalized transpiration ratio is a comparison between the drying plants and the well-watered plants. So this proportion with well-watered over drying plant gives you a ratio that approaches 1. When drying plants are in their well-watered phase before they start drying, the ratio of their transpiration rates is approximately 1. And then as the soil water is depleted, that ratio will approach 0. And then the total transpirable soil water is we have as from 1 to 0 as well. So in all cases where this type of study has been implemented, we've seen a two-phase response in the transpiration decline. And as you can see here, we have that same two-phase response in each of these with a break point here. And at that break point, we have a rapid decline in transpiration ratio, where along here, that drying plant is maintaining about the same amount of water loss as the drying plant, or as the well-watered plant, but then after the break point, that difference is changing very rapidly. So the transpirable water we were looking at from 1 down to zero fraction of transpirable soil water. So that means that we took the total water in the pot at the beginning of the experiment, and then when we got down to where that transpiration ratio was about 0.1, or about 10% of what the well-watered plant was transpiring, we took that difference, and that total amount of water that was available to the plant was our total transpirable soil water. And then we calculated for each day the fraction of transpirable soil water that was still available in the pot for that day, and then we compared that the fraction of transpirable soil water to the transpiration ratio on that day. So this is day to day, and then each point here is a different pot. So as you can see off to the right, the bahia grass dried out more quickly than did the other grasses. It dried in about 9 to 10 days, and then the St. Augustine grass dried down to that 0.1 point in 11 to 14 days, and then zoysia grass took about the same amount of time, 12 to 14 days as well. And also, if you look, the gross amount of water that was used per pot by each of these species was approximately the same. However, if you divide that by the number of days, then the amount of water per day used by each of the plants was somewhat different, with a pretty big discrepancy between the bahia grass and the zoysia grass. So as you can see here, we also had not too much of a difference in our break points. They were all approximately 0.12 or 0.13 for each of these that we examined. And I'll talk about the importance of that in a moment. So then we also evaluated the canopy visual response. We looked at wilting of the green tissue in the canopy. This is not exactly the same as you would do a quality rating. And then we also looked at firing, or percentage of the canopy that had turned straw color that had previously been green. So this was not including what might have been underneath the canopy, when the green canopy. We were looking at new firing. I should make that clear. So when we look at the wilting, the transpirable soil water was 80% gone by the time we saw any wilting in bahia grass. And it was 90% used by the time we saw wilting in St. Augustine and zoysia grass. And then by the time we get down to the end of the transpirable soil water, we had a significant amount of wilting. So what this tells us is that they wilt very late in this soil water loss process. And then when we looked at firing, we saw an even later response, as you might expect, but we did not see any firing in zoysia grass down to this point of drought stress. And we saw a moderate amount of firing up to about 40%, 40-45% in bahia grass, and then some firing, approximately 20-25% firing in St. Augustine grass. So here's a comparison visually between the well-watered on the left, and this is the visual stress at that NTR of 0.1. And remember what I said about firing, that we were only counting the amount of firing that was new firing. We weren't considering the tissue that might have been underneath from like the previous season, because this was sod. And so as you can see, we had a significant amount of stress that occurred by the end of the experiment. So we also looked at reflectance using an NDVI meter, and as you can see, we also had a sort of this breakpoint response as well, and it corresponded pretty tightly to what we saw with the transpiration ratio of the drying to well watered. And what's important here is that the NDVI was indicative of the drought stress, but it was not predictive. It did not show up a difference in reflectance before we saw that intense visual stress. So one of the questions that we've been tossing around in the turf group at the University of Florida is, what exactly does drought tolerance mean in turf grasses? Does it mean that you go all season long, regardless of your water inputs, and you still have a green, leaves open turf? Or does it mean that when you have a period of prolonged drought, such as we have in Florida, basically from, say, mid-April through the entire month of May sometimes, with very minimal, if any, rain events, does it mean that it just persists? Does that mean that your lawn could go dormant and then come back? Or does that mean that you want to see green through that entire time? And I think that that question changes in across different parts of the country for homeowners. Maintaining visual quality is also a question, either before or after a dormancy or through the drought period, do they want to see a continued high-quality turf? So, and then we have the question of pushing quality or even survival limits under deficit irrigation, because some of the water restrictions that we're looking at in urban areas are really going to be pushing these limits. And are we going to have biological material that's going to be able to meet these needs? So in light of those questions, how do we interpret the breakpoint? This breakpoint information? Low breakpoints indicate extended transpiration into the dry period. So when that soil water is being exhausted for what is available to the plants, are they still transpiring until the very, very end? Or are the stomata going to close a little bit sooner and conserve some of that soil water? And then, that's the pro of that, is that potentially you can have more growth as the soil dries with those lower breakpoints. Or with a higher breakpoint, with a low breakpoint, you can have a full depletion of soil water in the rooting zone. And then what is the potential for breeding? Well, it depends on this maybe would give you an index, and it depends on what it is that you're wanting as an end result. So before I go on to the acknowledgments, I just wanted to thank the turf staff at the University of Florida for their help, as well as the Southwest Water Management District and the Florida Ag Experiment Station, who funded our work. And I'll take any questions. They were about a foot deep.
What temperatures were the containers exposed to during the dry down periods?
They were in a greenhouse in a Florida summer, so probably, upper 90s. Yes?
And what was the media?
The media in the pots, these were grown in foil in field soil from Citra, Florida, so it was Candler sand. That's true. There's been one other study that's been done looking at some sea. The question was, is this lower than what's been shown on other germplasm? It is. I wonder if perhaps a lot of the other crops that have been studied have been C3 crops, and these are C4 crops. I wonder if there's a little bit of difference there. And then also, these are grown on sand, almost pure sand, which is what our field soil is in Florida, versus some more organic matter soil. And that organic matter in the soil has been shown to make a difference in this breakpoint as well. But the point really is that you're able to go head-to-head with a lot of material, because that's a very, very simple way of looking at it. Yes? Right.
Calibrating that to get to 0.01, were the conditions the same as what you tested the treatments themselves? In other words, were you all done in the greenhouse? Because you had to calibrate, you had to use that endpoint.
Right.
So was it done in reasonable, same kind of conditions, temperature, day length, all that stuff?
The transpirable soil water was done for each pot in the experiment. In situ, so it was each pot had its own total transpirable soil water calculation.
Right, but I mean, you had to go through some. Each separate pot was calibrated itself.
Yep, each is calibrated to itself.
You ever reach a state where the grass was so stressed that you had to bring all the plants back to one start point before you started making comparisons?
No, we were doing a linear decrease in soil water over about a two-week period. So we didn't have a point when we started over. I have done that in a follow-up experiment to see what happens. So. Yes. Okay. The question was, how do we define the end point for the transpirable soil water, that zero point? Well, it should be considered more of a limit rather than an actual point, like approaching zero, because I don't think you could ever completely get to zero. But what we're talking about is when the transpiration ratio versus the well-watered plant got to about 0.1, just for comparison, in our system, we're talking about the difference between approximately 200 grams per day of water loss for bahia grass, and we're talking about at the 0.1 where they got down to about 5 grams or less water loss per day, still some green tissue. And so that is where we consider our endpoint. It's basically where we got to no appreciative water loss continuing, and about the limits of what our balance could measure as well. So.
At that point, the plants really built it without losing color, but they didn't twist it up on themselves, you know, how was that determined? At the 0 point, like you said.
Right. Well, it was determined by the water loss, the 0 point was, but then we were looking at the wilting, and the wilting, it depends on the vernation, but for St. Augustine grass, it folds up flat together, and then for the bahia grass, it just sort of wilts flat, just kind of falls over, and then the zoysia grass kind of makes sort of a needle point looking thing. And actually, I forgot that I had this image here. This is a partially rolled or wilted zoysia grass, and this is it. And then this is a day after it was rewatered. This was from a subsequent experiment, but this is getting down into that 0.2 NTR range before we got quite to 0.1, and then this is watered the next day. So see, it pops right back. So we're looking at before you get to like a permanent wilting point. We're looking at the phase before that. So. Yeah, thank you.